Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I am here at International Quilt Festival in Houston. And what's really fun is when I'm at the quilt festival and the quilt market, the trade show, I get to meet the designers in person that come on the radio show here. And today I have Janet Clare from the UK, and it's really exciting. She's another moda designer like I am, and so we've been near each other for the trade show, and I'm like, hey, let's talk. You tell me about your work, because her work is so incredibly sweet and wonderful and beautiful, and it's all seaside things at the moment. I'm just in love with it. Janet, thanks you for doing this.
My pleasure.
Now, have you been to US before?
I have for holidays, but okay. Not to Texas.
Yeah, not to Texas. Yeah,
Texas. I've done New York, and we drove up to Boston.
What part of the UK do you live in?
I live in Hampshire. So it's 40 minutes on the train from to the left of London.
Okay, all right, so we can all pull the map up.
Yeah,
exactly.
To the left of London.
Yeah, so do you, have you been designing for a while? You have in your collection with Moda, you have books.
Yes, I have been a freelance designer for about 6 years in the patchwork industry, but I actually have a textile degree, and I was a knitwear designer for a long time.
Oh, wow. So as a knitwear designer, does that mean you did clothing, or did you do like knitting? What does that mean?
It's like licensing your designs. I had a knitwear agent. So I actually used to knit cloth. And this was pre-internet.
Yeah.
So I used to actually physically hand over knitted cloth to the agent. She used to take it around the world.
Oh, how fun is that?
Yeah, it was great. I did children's wear, actually.
It's just, I always am so amazed. I mean, I love your designs. Explain your style. I find like charming for me is like a word. But how do you describe it?
It all starts from drawing and sketching. Mm-hmm. And I try to be, I sketch with a continuous line.
Oh, okay.
I actually taught in a primary school, and a little boy said that my drawing was like, you know, you join up your writing as you're getting older and you're getting good, you can join up your letters. And he said I did joined up drawing.
Oh.
So it's quite fluid, and I draw like that on my sewing machine as well. So I think it's quite naive and quirky because it's working quite quick.
It's quite
a quick, fluid technique. So it is a bit quirky and naive and maybe folky.
Yeah, a little bit. I even feel like a little bit of an Asian influence.
Wow.
Yeah, just personally, like if you look at the images, I love your whale.
He's very slender.
Yes, yes, a slender whale.
Yes,
he doesn't need to go on a diet. So tell me about what you currently have out. You know, what's out on the market now? You have a book called Hearty Good Wishes.
It's my second book. So I've written three, but Moda have picked up the second one. We've developed the fabric to go with it. It's called Hearty Good Wishes. And I got the title from an Edwardian Christmas card that I found when I was out. You guys call it thrifting.
Yeah.
when I was out thrifting. And it's... somebody had kept it since 1915. It was sent by a lady called Eva in 1915. Somebody had kept it. And the greeting, instead of, you know, Happy Christmas, was Hearty Good Wishes, which I just thought was so lovely. And it had the seaside theme on it. And
so it was a Christmas card with a seaside theme.
Yes.
And how interesting.
That's the link. That really, you know...
Started
so
your
interesting
wheels.
Interesting and inspiring. Yeah, really interesting. And that's my favourite time to go to the coast.
Yeah.
And I grew up on the Kent coast, near the White Cliffs of Dover. And I've got red hair and freckles, so I don't do very well in the heat and the sunshine. And it's just my favourite time to be at the coast. It's blustery and you can hear all the gulls and there's movement and the light's usually lovely. And the fabric line is all indigos and linen colours and it's quite fresh and clean.
Yes, yes.
And it's all just tied up with that.
So how did you, when you saw that, you know, you saw the card and this beautiful saying and you love the sea, then how did you start your sketches? Do you do them on paper or do you go right to the computer? Do you paint?
No, I don't do anything on the computer.
Oh, okay.
I'm really bad at the computer.
Oh, okay. So you do...
I'm quite scared of it. Everything I do a lot of drawing. A new project, new sketchbook. I love a new sketchbook.
Oh.
New project, new sketchbook. And I do some mono printing, actually. Again, because I want that fluid line, I try and draw quite quickly.
So what does mono printing mean?
Mono printing, it's a paper technique, but you actually ink up with a roller. I've got an old mirror, but it's a sheet of glass.
Yeah.
You ink it all up, so you've got the glass is covered in ink, and then you put paper face down, and then you draw on the paper, and where it touches the ink on the glass, it picks up. So you can't see what you're drawing until you peel the paper away. And that gives me that fluid, that spontaneous look again. It's brilliant. I love doing it. It's great.
Neat.
And it's got a really nice line quality because it's not crisp. It's got a speckle. So it's quite an interesting line. So
a little textury,
So I always start with drawing. And I think by the time I'm ready to start sketching, the ideas are there almost. Sometimes I feel like I'm not making any progress, and then all of a sudden I'm ready to start, and everything seems to be there. I think I need thinking time.
So it sort of
percolates, and then I'm ready to start. And I usually do, we used to call them mood boards, you know, physically get tear sheets and stick them
down. Yeah, I was wondering, do you get pictures from magazines or
I use Pinterest now.
Oh yeah, Pinterest. Oh my gosh,
So there is, if you go to my Pinterest account, there is a board called Hearty Good Wishes. And it's there. Yeah.
I want to look like right now. Okay, tell us your website.
It's www.janetclare.co.uk.
And Claire is
Clare. And that is my surname.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Yes. So Jenna Clare. So there we can go to find her Pinterest board. So now you're collecting. Would you have collected like seaside photos?
Yes. Or shell. We've got shells and threads and buttons and bits. Anything at all. And I would just pull out everything that seemed to fit and seemed to make sense, and then just really start sketching. But once I've got a title and a feeling, I sort of feel like I'm halfway there, I'm ready. And then once you start, things evolve. And the beauty of self-publishing is that there's nobody to say no. So, and the book's ready when I say it's ready. So I take a long time to do it. And there's knitting patterns, and there's a recipe for my favorite cake. And there's embroidery, and it's just so much fun. It's just so much fun to do.
So what is your favorite project in the book? Do you have one?
My favorite project in the book is the Blighty Quilt, which is a map of the UK. And it's in the sea. You can see the sea. And the sea is divided up into shipping areas. And on our BBC Radio 4, which is really well-respected talk radio, they have something called the shipping forecast. It's on really late at night.
The shipping forecast.
And it tells you, it's for sailors, and it tells you what the weather and the waves are doing in each area of our coastline. And it's just like poetry. It's really soothing. So I'm normally sitting in my studio. The boys are upstairs sleeping. And I've got the radio on. And I've got a cup of tea. And I'm sitting and I'm listening. And I'm imagining what all the sailors are fighting with and battling with and what the waves are doing. And it's really descriptive because they give the waves a number. So, for example, zero is glassy calm. So they say in the 40s it's zero, and then you can think, oh, it's glassy calm in 40s. And then in Dover they'll go many white, number five, which is many white caps, and I know that the sea's getting stormy, and I can imagine that coastline. That's where I grew up. So a lot of it's to do with words and how that conjures up an imagery, but a lot of it's words and feeling, and then I think the imagery comes quite late.
Oh, that is just, I love to know how people think through things.
It's fascinating because everybody's thought process is completely different.
Yeah, it is. And some people have it all formed in their head and they just plunk it out. And others, it's like a whole totally different, many, many sketches.
Exactly.
Tell me about your
my
apron.
Pinny.
Yeah, we call it an apron and you call it a pinny.
Yes. Well, if you were shopping, you would buy an apron. But it's a quaint word for an apron is a pinny. So it's my pinny. It's my work uniform. It's because I work at home and I've got two small children and I was getting really distracted by the chores and people coming to the door and wanting a cup of tea. And
oh, you work at home. Yeah. Let's have
a
break.
Exactly. I'm not doing anything.
Right.
And it looks like I'm not doing anything because I'm sitting embroidering or something.
Right.
So I thought I needed a uniform. So I've made a beautiful white linen uniform and it's got a crossover back and it's quite loose and comfortable to wear. And then I've been embellishing it. So it's embroidered with little catchphrases, things my children have said, buttons, bits of fabric. It's got my motto on it, which is she believed she could. And so she did.
I love that.
And it's got a nurse's fob watch.
Ah.
And I just... when I put it on, I'm in the right frame of mind to work. That I've set the intention that I'm going to be working.
Right.
And everyone can see that I'm working. And my children know that they're not supposed to bother me. And when I take it off, I leave work.
Right, right.
And if I'm at home, I wear different shoes as well. I've got clogs.
Oh. I may have to try this. I may need a uniform.
It works.
Yeah.
It works.
And I'm noticing, too, that is this one already embroidered or are you working on it?
No, that's embroidered.
Oh, and it's a very
pale. It's a variegated thread.
Oh, it's beautiful.
This was a great quote that I read. It said, if there is a bluebird of happiness, then there must be a pigeon of discontent.
Oh, wow.
So there's a pigeon on there as
well. On the pigeon. So just to wrap up, you do your embroidery. What kind of stitch do you like to do?
I'm not really an embroiderer, so it's a back stitch or a split stitch.
Okay.
Very simple. And I like French knots, but that's about all I can do.
I like French knots, too.
It's simple.
Yeah. Very, very simple. Very. Then she has a little dog and the seagulls. I love the seagulls. Yeah, the
lace. My best friend collects lace, so she gave me some lace. And it's just a comfort to put on now.
Yeah. It's just totally gorgeous. I'm going to give your website again. It's Janet Clare, one word, CLARE.co.uk. And you can check out her blog, her Pinterest. You have some free patterns there.
I have some free patterns. There's more coming. It's on the list.
On the list.
They're on the list.
And you can check out her book, Hearty Good Wishes. And is that the same name for the fabric?
Yes.
Yes, Hearty Good Wishes with the sea ship and just lovely, lovely.
Thank you,
Janet.
It's been a pleasure. It's been a pleasure.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. We're going to take a little break and then we'll be right back.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To save time, Rotary cuts several layers of fabric at once. To prepare a stack for cutting, steam press one fabric, place the second fabric on top of it, and press again, repeating until you have stacked as many fabrics as you feel comfortable cutting at once. Ironing the fabrics together with steam helps them kind of cling to each other, resulting in more precise pieces.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, Boys or Girls Club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 million pillowcase challenge. We're counting on you.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. We are here at International Quilt Festival in Houston, and I'm at the consumer part of the show where we have all kinds of vendors, and I was walking down the aisles and ran into Q Antiques with Barbara and John Quinby from Kerrville, Texas. So this booth has got the most awesome thread cabinets. And I asked them if they'd come on and tell us a little bit about thread cabinets. They're all antiques, and they're antique dealers. So welcome to the show, John and Barbara. Well,
thank you for having us.
So Barbara, can you just tell me first a little bit about what the products are, the thread cabinets? Or if John is the better choice, John can tell us.
John is the searcher. He loves antiquing. And of course, we have many antiques in our house, but he loves to search out and find these all across the country. But thread cabinets were an original point of sale marketing technique by many, many thread companies. Around the Civil War time period, there were many more individually branded threads than we have today. And so they searched for a way to get customer loyalty to their thread brand. And so they would package all their threads in a box or a cabinet, and they'd put their name on it in a lot of ways, in glass etching, in inking into the original wood, in decals or stenciling. And so they'd give those to the storekeeper so that the storekeeper would repurchase their thread brand. And so it was a branding technique. And we have thread cabinets that range in size from large coffee table size, to desktops, which would have been used by the store owner actually as their desk, to very small two drawer pieces that today are used mostly decoratively in homes. And so there's a wide range of company names and a very wide range of size and style. And John probably does all the woodworking fun stuff.
So do you refurbish them a little bit, John?
Most of the school cabinets that I get are in pretty good shape. Now, some of them have come apart over the years. Most school cabinets, it's interesting to note that most school cabinets came into being around between 1875 and 1915. That makes them pretty old.
Yeah.
And they get beat up over time, and the wood comes apart, the glue comes apart. So I have to, a lot of times, put them back together. Sometimes I have to replace a part because it's just too worn worn out to use the way it is. But I'm a woodworker, so I love to do that kind of thing.
That's the fun part, right?
It is one of the
fun parts. So how do you find these? How did you even find the first one? You know, do you remember the first one?
Well, that's interesting because I got interested in school cabinets through our local Kerrville fabric store, Creations.
Great store.
Wonderful.
And Creations had a number of school cabinets, and every time Barbara would go into the store, which was quite often.
No.
How can that be?
Right.
Anyway, I would wander around the store looking at the spool cabinets, and I thought, boy, these are really, really nice. Mm-hmm. And so I got interested in them, and then I decided we're going to take some trips up to the Midwest and just see what we could find. And we went to auctions and different antique stores.
Estate sales.
And
Estate sales.
I picked up a number of them. At one point I had 50 spool cabinets.
Oh my gosh. And I bet Barbara wanted to keep some.
I have kept some.
Oh, good, good.
So that's kind of how I got interested in them. And being a woodworker, I love to work on them, refinish them. And, but it's surprising, many of them don't need to be refinished, even though they're over 100 years old.
Right.
And I don't like to change the spool cabinet very much. If it's in presentable shape and the finish is halfway decent, then I'll leave it that way. Mm-hmm. And I think people like to see that more.
Right. Keep it more natural, the way you found them.
Exactly.
So, Barbara, what are some of the brands that are most commonly found, the thread brands?
Well, the first people to come over, when the U.S. put a tariff on threads, which we got mostly from Scotland, we put a tariff on those threads. But just like today, you can avoid tariffs if the final assembly is done in the U.S. So George Clark and his brother-in-law, Peter Kerr, came over from Scotland, and they each built cabinets with their individual names on it, George Clark thread and Peter Kerr thread, and stuffed these cabinets full of their thread, and then the final assembly was in the U.S., and so therefore they didn't pay the tariff on their threads. And eventually, of course, the thread companies themselves, the spooling came to the U.S., but in the early time of these cabinets, it was a way to bring in their threads under the cover of legitimate non-taxable goods. Kind of like today, I guess.
Yeah, so the secret drawers were really filled with thread.
That's right.
A quilter's dream.
So if we can find a Kerr, that's rare to find one that's inked with Kerr, or George Clark before it became the Clark Thread Company. Then those are rare, and we love those. But there are a lot of Clarks and a lot of Coates thread cabinets. And then the brands that kind of combined in the early 1900s, what was that, honey, 1911 or?
Well, there was one company called Brainerd & Armstrong that came into existence in the late 1800s and marketed under that name for many years. And then Brainerd & Armstrong and the No-No-Tuck Silk Company combined in 1922, I think it was, they combined into the Corticelli Company.
Oh, that sounds so fascinating.
Now, Corticelli.
It is.
And that's one that's sought after a lot, that brand name. I think the names that we recognize because our mothers or our grandmothers used them are more sought after, like Corticelli, than even the Brainerd and Armstrong, or Armstrong and Brainerd, is an older name, but it's not as recognizable to us. And No-No-Tuck is not recognizable at all.
One of the things that I found out over time is how many different thread companies there are. I probably can name close to 25 thread companies, which to me, that's very surprising.
Right.
And another interesting fact was today we know the Coates and Clark as Coates and Clark. Well, it started out as the Clark Company, George Clark, and then it went to, it changed, well, there was the Clark Company, and then there were the J&P Coates Company. And then they started doing business in the early 1900s together, but they didn't become known as Coates and Clark until 1952. Very late. And Coates and Clark is still
going strong. Great supporter of the quilt industry too. I'm really fascinated about the one unit you showed me, what you called a desk earlier, and it had. Can you just describe, whoever wants to describe that one?
Sure. That is one of the rarer ones we've had, and it is a cash register, and the vendor's desk, nighttime desk, for doing his reporting and his reconciliation of income to ledgers, as well as a thread cabinet.
Yeah.
And we were lucky in that this one has the manufacturer's plate on it, so we know it was made in East Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania, and that it was manufactured in 1891. And we sold it yesterday to a woman who's taking it back to Pennsylvania.
Oh, didn't it give you chills? It's like, oh, it goes home. It goes
home.
How exciting. I found that one fascinating because it's not something I'd sort of seen before.
It's very unusual. I've seen a lot of school cabinets and have not seen one like that one.
You showed me something yesterday on the one cabinet, if you could just describe it again, where you can tell the difference between an inked, describe what an inked name is and a stencil name.
Sure. Well, when they put their names, their branding, on these cabinets to ensure that, their thread was in their cabinet, if it's inked, if there was black ink put right into the wood, it couldn't be changed. And so that is underneath the original varnish, and you can feel that. And we never change attribution. Even if we know it's been slightly changed before we got it, we never touch attribution. Although we may refinish the top of a cabinet, we won't touch the sides where there's
all the labels
and such. So the inking was done first on raw wood and then varnished. And you can tell that if you run your finger along it. Totally smooth.
Yeah.
Where later on in the history of these, it became more popular to put decals on, where they pre-print the label
just like today probably, mm-hmm. and put them on the side of a cabinet.
Yeah.
And they might varnish over that, but when you run your finger over that, even though the decal is under the varnish, mm-hmm. you can feel a slight lip.
Lip, yeah. And would those be newer cabinets then?
Yes, they would be newer.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And one thing is, they, even though they used a stencil, it was very accurate, and usually very accurate, and mm-hmm. you could hardly tell the difference between a stencil one and regular, except for the
feeling
test.
It, feeling it. Yeah. And you also, because you're also antique dealers, this is one portion of your antique business, is the specialization here, right. but you also pick up several other fun cabinets, like you have one for diamond dyes. What was that, what did they hold in there?
Well, dye packets, and if you open the back of that cabinet, it's all original. It's one of the most pristine cabinets we've ever owned. It's going to California. It's been sold as well. But you open the back of that, and there's two sides. And diamond dyes came in a powder form in pink packets or blue packets, depending on what the content of the fiber was you were going to dye.
Ah.
But the colors were the same. So there's mm-hmm. a level for blue mm-hmm. dyes, but both pink and blue packets.
Yeah.
And so in that particular case, part of the value is the rareness of that particular tin plate on the front.
Oh, it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Like, just pristine. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know much about it, but it's all the wording is on there. It's just absolutely gorgeous. Now, I want to give people your email, because you travel and vend, and so if they're interested or you have pieces at home, they could call you, right?
Right.
Or they could email you. So it's John Barb Quinby, Quinby, @gmail.com. So if you are looking for a sewing machine cabinet, give John or Barbara an email. And this has been awesome. Thank you so much for being here.
Well, thank you.
Yes, now I'm coveting a cabinet.
We'd love to help you with that.
I'm sure.
Or we'll help your husband with that.
There we go. Christmas. This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I am Pat Sloan. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. If you're working on more than one quilt project at a time and have limited storage space, stash each ongoing project in a large white gift box. Label the ends, and stack the boxes in your closet.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. While I was in Houston, like the first two recordings, you know, I was going around and I saw Sue Garman and I said, you know, we need to talk and we need to have you on the radio. And we were going to try to get together there, and it was just too nutty, as sometimes it can be. And so we decided we would go ahead and just call afterwards and do a segment. So Sue Garman's work, if you are not familiar with it, you just need to go right on there to suegarman.blogspot.com or suegarman.com and just check her out. Her quilts are stunning. She does a variety of styles, and Sue is majorly prolific. She has made a lot of quilts. She has a passion for quilt making that is just, you know, I don't know that anybody else has the same level of intensity that Sue does. She loves everything. Well, just about everything. So Sue is here with me today. We're going to talk for the whole second half of the show, and I'm super, super excited. So hi, Sue. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Pat. It is always such a pleasure to see you, and even better yet, to be able to spend time talking to you.
You know, let's talk a little bit about your first quilt making. You know, did you start, were you quilting from birth or what?
Nearly. Actually, my grandmother was a quilter, and we used to spend every weekend at her house, and literally I do not remember not knowing how to quilt, because as soon as we were old enough to quilt, which was probably around age 4, she had us making crazy quilts. She took scraps from all the neighbors that she could get, and she made crazy quilts out of them. Not the fancy embellished ones, but just utility crazy quilts, and I still have 5 of them that she made and that I helped her make, and I love every one of them.
Oh, my gosh. That is an enormous treasure to have. I don't have any family quilts because my family didn't quilt, so I'm always so impressed that people have that legacy. And, you know, it's interesting you say you can't even remember not quilting. So did you continue as a teenager?
I dropped out some. I always knew how to quilt, but I wasn't quilting with the same fervor that I do now. But probably sometime in my late 20s or so, I had been working on a counted cross stitch, and it took me about 3 months to make this 8x10 inch piece. And when I was finished with it, I also finished making a bed-sized quilt, and it took me 3 days to finish it. And I thought, you know what, there's something more to making a quilt than to doing counted cross stitch. And I never turned back, and I've never made counted cross stitch since. And I've done nothing but quilt since.
Oh, my gosh. You know, I've tried counted cross stitch once, Sue. Once was enough.
Yes. Well, by the way, the only bad thing about starting so young is when people ask me, how long have you been quilting? It's really awful to say, oh, well, way over 50 years.
Yeah. That's because you were like 6 months old when you started, so that's what you can tell them. Now, Sue, tell me a little bit. I want to give people a little bit of your background, because you are a very detail-oriented person. I think anybody that looks at your work would tell that right away. You have an incredible eye for detail. You spent the first part of your life, your first career, was not as a quilt maker except for hobbies and partly business. But you worked at NASA. What did you do for NASA?
I started out working for NASA as a contracting officer, a buyer basically, and worked my way up through the ranks. And in the last 10 years of my life there, I was the associate director of the Johnson Space Center and the deputy chief of staff of the agency.
That's kind of a big job.
Yeah, but you know what? I loved every single minute of it. No day was like any other day. They were all different. They were all fun. They were all challenging, too.
You know, what I find fascinating is that you started your business while you had a very, very demanding day job, you know, and that's really takes a lot to do. Why did you start to sort of develop your designs and teach and publish?
Well, quilting really was therapy for me. We worked 60-hour weeks, and I would come home at night or on the weekends. To pick up quilting to me was just the most relaxing thing in the world. I ended up being asked to teach a couple classes at a local quilt shop and sort of got into the design end of it from there. But really, the engineers never knew I quilted, and my quilting friends never knew that I had a life at NASA.
Oh, my gosh. They never, you know what? You didn't take quilts into the office, Sue?
Oh, no. That would get me in trouble, I think.
Yeah. You know, I have to tell you, because I worked in computers and I was a supervisor at one point, and I used to take my quilts into the office and make all my staff ooh and ah over them. I was really bad. I was like, look at this. They go, oh, that's so nice. You know, they were all men. They had no clue what I was showing them.
I think that's why I didn't take mine in. I didn't want them to tell me how nice my blankets looked, right?
Right. Exactly. Well, let's actually talk quilts. And maybe you can speak up. I know you're on speakerphone. Just speak up just a tiny little bit louder when we're talking. Yeah. You like applique. And tell me what draws you to doing applique.
I think what I like about applique is the creativity that you can put into it. It's really an opportunity to take any shape, any size, any color, and put it into whatever you want with applique. I'm also drawn particularly to red and green quilts that were made in the 1800s, the mid-1800s on. There's just something attractive to me about them.
How do you are you making I know you make a lot of styles, Sue. So let's talk a little bit about how you're inspired by the antique applique quilts. Are you actually just reproducing them, or do you change them up while you're designing so that the blocks are a little fresher and more like a Sue block?
Well, many of my quilts are based on antique quilts, but they're never exact replicas. I can't follow a pattern. I probably can't even follow my own patterns. And so if I see something I like, I generally make a little tiny sketch of it, usually on an index card, take it home, put it in a file. Later on, I'll pull it out and take a look at it. And when I'm ready to make it, I'll start making it. And I'll modify it from what the old one was. For example, I did a Baltimore album quilt that had an eagle on it. I had avoided making a Baltimore album quilt for years simply because I never liked those old eagles that had those smushy looking beaks. They looked like they'd run into the back of a tree or something. And so for me, it was pulling them into a more refined look, if you understand what I mean by that.
Right.
And so for me, that's the fun of it, is sort of giving them a new birth, sort of.
Now, do you go out, do you actually purchase antique quilts, Sue?
I have a few, but it's not something that I'm crazy about doing. It's expensive. Usually I'll ask a booth, a vendor in one of the booths in one of the big shows, if they'll let me take a picture or if they'll let me sketch something, and they almost always say sure. So, you know, it works both ways. I do have a few, and the ones that I do buy, I'm inspired by because of the design, and sometimes just because of the color, especially if it has cheddar in it.
Oh, you're a cheddar girl, huh? That cheddar yellow. So tell me a little bit about how you draw your things out. Do you use a computer at all? Or are you all doing it on paper?
If it's an applique quilt, I sketch it out sort of so I see how the whole design will look on a piece of paper, you know, in terms of balancing the size of blocks and shapes and how many blocks, etc. Then I'll go to the computer. I actually use an electric quilt to size my blocks to see how they look with various sizes and shapes of borders. And then I'll sit down and design my own borders and shapes, draw the entire applique piece out by hand, usually on freezer paper, and then I trace it on a light box onto some more refined paper, and the pattern goes from there.
Now, how do you are very symmetrical. Your pieces are beautifully laid out in symmetry, and I just love it. I'm looking right now at your bed of roses, the red and green, and just the flow and the curves. How do you get that perfect? Is that in electric quilt?
No, I do all the design work for applique totally by hand, and it really is. Just, you know, 30 or 40 years of experience of drawing, and I used to do, one of my first jobs was actually doing the drafting and illustrations at NASA, and so I got a lot of experience doing it, and it just comes with time. It comes with using good tools. I have lots of French curves and pieces like that I can use for getting smooth curves.
Ah, yeah, so you have way more patience than me, Sue. I would have to buy your patterns to get them that even. They're just gorgeous. They're just gorgeous. So tell me, before we take the break, tell me a little bit about the quilt with all the big sailing ships. I just love that piece.
Oh, Ladies of the Sea. I had always wanted to do a Baltimore-style quilt. I wasn't ready to do sort of the official Baltimore quilt, but I decided that I would do one that had different ships on it. And so I actually spent several months just pouring through the internet and looking at different size ships and models and paintings of them and pictures of them and photos of them until I found a set of 16 different blocks that were unique enough that they would make a great quilt. And I drew them up and put them together and stitched it up, and that's how it all came to be. It's pretty simple.
Oh, my gosh. And so you have to go out. What is the name of that quilt again?
Ladies of the Sea.
Ladies of the Sea. Each block is just a beautiful, old-fashioned sailing ship. I'm totally fascinated by that. I think I'd do one block, Sue. Will that be okay if I could just do Just do one.
You can just do one flower. That's fine with me.
Okay. Perfect, perfect, perfect. What we're going to do is we're going to take a little break, and when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about the applique technique that you like to use.
Okay.
So this is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and we'll be right back.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Once fabric pieces have been pressed, let them cool in place before moving them. It prevents distortion of bias edges.
Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by Baby Lock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I'm talking to master quilter Sue Garman. So, Sue, let's talk applique technique. What is your favorite technique?
I do 100% needle turn.
Wow.
I have tried other methods. I don't shun them. I'm just not as good at them. I've been doing this method for so long that it works for me. It's the most efficient and gives me the best results, and that's what everybody should aim for.
You know, I love your philosophy that you advocate doing what works for you. Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, I think that, you know, there's probably 100 different ways that one can do applique, for example. Some work for some people, others don't. And I think that everybody ought to do what gives them the best results and makes them the happiest and the least stressed when they're doing the work. It makes quilting more enjoyable when you do that.
You know, and I totally agree, because you should enjoy it. So if like one method of applique doesn't work, take another. And you really advocate taking workshops.
Oh, absolutely. I still take classes today. I learn something every time I do from somebody different, no matter what class it is. It doesn't mean that I'm going to learn what they're teaching me. For example, I still have yet to learn how to do a running stitch with hand quilting. I failed every single class.
You can do yours other ways. It looks really beautiful.
Well, I'll snap stitch, and it works for me.
So tell me a little bit about shortcuts, because I also think you have a great sort of philosophy about this, because what you said to me, it doesn't mean sloppy taking a shortcut.
Right. I believe that I'm not a speed demon. I'm not interested in making as many quilts as fast as I can. But at the same time, I don't like wasting my time. So, for example, if I'm going to do a big applique block, I will trace every piece onto freezer paper. I'll cut them all out, put them on the fabric that's meant for that particular piece. Then I'll baste them all onto my background fabric all at once, so then I can sit down and do all the applique at once. So it's really doing steps serially instead of one thing at a time, one leaf at a time, then another leaf, then another leaf. It just makes it faster for me. It's a good example why I don't do back basting for applique is, to me, that's just more steps that I don't need to take. So, you know, that doesn't work for me for that particular reason, but it works for somebody else. I just think that, you know, if you can eliminate steps and still get a refined, finished product, you just get it done sooner and you're happier. Then you can start the next project, because I've always got 10 or more waiting in the back to get done next.
Absolutely, absolutely. I just love that, because I like to have the shortest path to what I'm doing. Take the, you know, and that's because I like to make a lot of stuff, so I would just want to keep going. I don't want to waste time either. You were telling me a little bit about a term that you like to use, which I think is a pretty interesting term, called to tumble up what you're doing. What does that mean when you challenge yourself that way?
Well, I think that a lot of times we'll make one block and we really, really like it and we think we're done with that block, and that's not how you look at something. If I make a block or a border or a particular applique motif and I really, really like it, it probably means you're going to see it again in another quilt. An example is I made a New York Beauty quilt several years ago, and that, I just love that quilt. The next quilt I made happened to be an oak leaf reel quilt because that's one of my favorite blocks. Mm-hmm. Well, one day I was looking at both of those quilts, and I thought, you know that big open area that's in the middle of a New York Beauty block?
Mm-hmm.
Why put an oak leaf reel in the middle of it and made an oak leaf reel quilt that was laid on top of, basically, a New York Beauty quilt? It just looks stunning. So thinking about how we can tumble one block forward into the next quilt really is a way to take the things that you love and move them forward in your quilting.
Ooh, that's a really, really interesting challenge. I like that. And that is a gorgeous quilt. I'm very fond of the New York Beauty, too. So it's like anything you can do to mix it up and keep those going and looking fresh. That's a lot of fun. What does your studio look like?
Well, I'm spoiled rotten. I have an upstairs studio that's about 25 feet by 17 feet. It has everything anybody could imagine, well, anything I could imagine that I would want in it is in there. I can go in there and hide away. I wish I could just put a kitchen in there, except I don't really cook, so you just have to have maybe a takeout window or something. But I'm just spoiled rotten by it. It's got, I have a long arm in there. I have basically sort of different areas. I have a computer area. I have my sewing area. I have my design area.
Wow.
Pretty piecing area. It just works out beautifully for me. I even have a sofa in there where I can watch television while I'm doing my quilting.
Oh, my goodness. It's paradise. It sounds like paradise.
Yes. The only thing that isn't in there are finished quilts because I have another room that has all my finished quilts in it. I have about 300 finished quilts in it, and they're either hanging on a rack or they're laying on a table because I don't like to fold quilts.
Oh, that's wonderful to have that kind of space to be able to, you know, keep them from getting those fold marks, those nasty fold marks.
All you have to do is kick the kids out and you got room.
There you go. That's the challenge, everybody. Get that room for yourself. Tell me a little bit about, you do both machine quilting and hand quilting.
Uh-huh.
So which do you prefer?
I like both of them, but for different reasons. I like the speed of doing machine quilting. And when I say machine quilting, it's on a long arm. I've never been able to master machine quilting on a domestic machine. So mm-hmm. I like doing the long arm quilting because I can do a lot more different motifs that are even smaller than you can do with hand. I like hand quilting because it is so, so relaxing. I can sit down with a quilt in a frame and just start quilting away, and I just lose all my troubles of the day. They're just gone. I can solve every problem while I'm quilting.
I love it. I love it. I'm not a big hand quilter. I do a little, you know, big stitch, but the machine quilting does that for me. You know, when I'm machine quilting, I just sort of lose track. It's like really, really, it is relaxing when you sort of get over that learning curve, don't you think?
Absolutely, and it takes practice to get to the point where you don't have to think while you're doing it.
Yeah, that's the thinking part with the machine quilting takes a little bit. Let me talk fabric with you here at the end. How do you go about buying new fabric? Is it just for a project, or are you collecting along the way and then you shop your stash when you get ready to make your quilts?
Well, most of the time, I wait until I'm ready to start a project, and then I go look at my stash and I figure out what else I need. Mm. And then I'll go out and shop for that particular need. At the same time, if I happen to be in a shop and I don't have a project in mind, I know the kind of fabrics that I like and that I use. I use Civil War fabrics, and I use rich tone-on-tones. And so if I see something along those lines, because, you know, like sometimes reds will really be in style, and then you'll mm-hmm. go through a season where there's nothing but orangey reds or purplish mm-hmm. reds. And so if I see something that I really like that I know comes and goes, I'll pick it up.
Yeah, that's. I think that's excellent. Many of us have that. One of the things I do that with is aqua, the very, very light aquas that are shaded tiny bit more greenish, because those are not always, you know, popular. So, you know, collecting when you see them is a really good thing. And I bet you collect that cheddar whenever you see it.
Oh, yeah, I got 2 boxes of cheddar.
Oh, so is there some place that you want to visit? I know I didn't ask you to think about this in advance, but is there like some place you want to visit that you haven't been to yet to sort of be inspired for quilt making?
You know, I haven't thought about it, but I think the one place that I'd really be inspired would be actually to go on a tour of cathedrals in Italy. Because the floors there, the tiles that they have in the floors and the pictures on the walls and the ceilings, oh my gosh, so much inspiration.
You know, I think that that would be a good trip. I haven't been to Italy yet. You know what? Maybe we need to organize something, Sue.
Plan it. I'll be there.
A trip to Italy. What to think about that? Well, Sue, this has been just incredible. I love talking to you and seeing your work. What is the project you're working on right now? Then we'll wrap it up.
Well, I'm working on about 10 of them right now, so you'll just need to wait and see. They'll all be done eventually. I always finish a quilt once I start it.
Oh, I know. You are amazing that way. You are a finisher. So we can come visit you at SueGarman.com, your blog, SueGarman.blogspot.com. Thank you so much, Sue.
Thanks so much, Pat. It's been a joy.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and you can visit us at allpeoplequilt.com, and you can visit me at patsloan.com, and we will see you next week.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques. Thanks for listening to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio.